You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hi, this is Gilbert Gottfried, and I'm here with my co-host, Frank Santopadre, and we're once again at Nutmeg with our engineer, Frank Verderosa, and this is Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions.
Colossal Obsessions.
Pure polish.
Yes.
You know that? You're like Derwood Kirby.
I thought of myself more of an Alan Funt.
An Alan Funt type?
Yes,
I don't think Alan Funt was a well-liked guy. Maybe our guest today can help answer that, since he knows a lot about show business. We have our pal, Mark Malkoff.
Nice to see you, gentlemen.
And
when we were talking off the air, you said, and we've had him on the show, and I did a movie with him, the actual problem child, Michael Oliver.
Michael Oliver, Johnny in the 80s, early 90s.
Well, let me set you up before we get to that.
Yes.
Mark is the host of a terrific podcast called the Carson Podcast that you guys should know about. In fact, we get mail about your show.
Oh, that's nice. I do the same about you guys,
well,
too.
Well, that's nice, because we're both doing shows about the golden age of show business.
Exactly.
Yours is very specifically geared toward Mr. Carson.
That's correct.
And how many have you done?
I think we've released, 115. I've done up probably 125.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a great show.
Thank you.
It's a great show. And we'll get into detail, but satisfy Gilbert. Tell him he's Michael Oliver.
Michael Oliver did The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson, plugging Problem Child. And that was when he was definitely having kids on the show. He went through a time period where Quinn Cummings, you remember her?
I follow her on Twitter.
Goodbye Girl. Yeah. So in her memoir, I wanted to try to get her on, but she was very nice about it. But apparently, and I watched the tape, she went on with Johnny, and Carson wouldn't have kids on for a year after she was on. I mean, she calls it disastrous. I watched the videotape, and you could tell Johnny's patience was waning. It was really, really hard. So he was really tricky with kids. They either scored with Carson. I mean, that one kid who was a spelling bee champion. It's like the famous clip he goes on with Johnny, and Johnny's doing coin tricks for him, and he's like, "How do you really make the money disappear? You get married." It's a famous Carson clip. He was either really good with kids or they just didn't go well.
Interesting.
Yeah, but Michael Oliver,
Joey Lawrence, I remember him doing very well with.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a classic.
He was up, Joey Lawrence said that he only got to see the show once when he was nauseous up late at night, and Johnny did the looking into the camera, the direct thing, and that always made the anniversary shows. But Michael Oliver did okay.
Yeah.
But you never got to do the show.
No, never did the Carson.
You did a ton with Leno. You did a ton of the Tonight shows with Leno, but never did a Carson.
It definitely, if Jim McCauley and Johnny perceived a comedian as being too David Letterman, they did this Letterman a lot. They wouldn't necessarily get to do the show with Johnny.
So you were more considered more 12:30 than 11:30.
Oh, I think so.
You did a handful of Lettermans.
Loads of Lettermans. Yeah. He used to call me in for those sketches in the beginning of the show. Those were fun. Now, what I found really odd growing up when Carson was on the air is, you know, there's been a million, urban legends and showbiz urban legends. But with Carson, what was so sick about it, there'd be these urban legends about Carson, which everyone would swear to you they saw.
The Jane Fonda thing, it never happened.
Yes.
We're talking about Zsa Zsa.
Oh,
it never happened.
Yeah.
I mean, there's...
It's just a myth. It's just a myth. Just a TV myth.
I mean, the thing that's a myth to me that I only know one person that has a tape and I've never seen it is I sat down with Rich Little in Vegas and he says he has the tape of Dick Shawn destroying the Tonight Show set. But I've not talked to anybody that's ever actually seen it. I've talked to people in the Carson camp. People say that they think it happened. Some people, but no one has the videotape other than Rich Little.
That's
and I have
bizarre.
To watch it.
Yeah, didn't you have Dick Shawn?
Yeah,
Adam Shawn, yeah.
She had a cat in her lap, according to legend.
As the story goes, yeah.
And Carson, and she said to Carson, would you like to pet my pussy? And he said, yeah, if you'd get the damn cat out of the way.
Jane, I have seen clips of Jane Fonda telling that story.
That was near the, Johnny retired May 22nd, 92, and that was, I think, in the last month or so. It was definitely near the end that she told that. But there are people that are convinced it happened.
I'm glad you said the date, by the way, because that's what we're doing here.
That's why
it's
I'm here.
25 years ago this week that Johnny...
Can you believe it?
Yeah, left May 22nd. Johnny left the air. So,
and there was another story that there was some actress on who was a lesbian. And she said, oh, I'd like to show you, you know, the love of my life. And then she points to this woman in the crowd, and according to legend, Carson goes, oh, what a waste.
Wow.
I have never heard of that.
I don't know that one either.
You know, the first 10 years were erased, most of them.
There are some, I was going to ask you about that.
There are some that were saved. I was with Ed Ames. I couldn't believe Scott Rogowski, our friend Scott Rogowski.
Yes, our mutual pal Scott.
I was heading to LA and he said, do you know who's still around? Ed Ames. And I said, you have to be kidding me.
Yep.
So I reached out and Ed Ames personally called me, and sure enough, I sat down with him. And
it's one of your best episodes.
Oh, it was really amazing to hear him talk about the tomahawk. But that was one of those things where Carson, in his brilliance, realized we have to preserve this clip. And I think Johnny put it in his drawer. And it's funny because Ed Ames mentioned that he would go on sometimes with Johnny five nights in a row and sing the same song. They had an hour and 45 minutes when they first started, and then it went down to 90 minutes. And all this time to kill.
Sure.
And can you imagine a late night show now having the same music singer on every night singing the same song five nights?
I remember the 90-minute version, and you would get usually an author at the tail end of the show.
I mean, Buck Henry. When they went down to 60 minutes, you lost a lot of the intellectuals.
Oh, yeah.
It became a completely different show.
The old days, you'd get Calvin Trillin, or you'd get Norman Mailer, or you'd get
Gore Vidal.
You'd get Gore Vidal, and you'd get those Irma Bombeck.
Johnny wanted to pick up the pace of the show, and that certainly did happen, but I definitely think, I have heard from many people that he regretted it.
So a little origin first. You and I have known each other forever.
Yeah.
You've known Gilbert a long time. Yeah. You were at our comedy writers' party a couple years ago. How did you and why did you decide to devote what I'm guessing is a large part of your life, because I know how much effort this show is, into doing a podcast about Johnny?
He was one of those figures that was larger than life. When he retired, I think that there was a mystery, almost like J.D. Salinger, when he bid America farewell. And he showed up, twice on Letterman doing cameos.
Yeah.
And he did The Simpsons. But I think he did Bob Hope, 90th birthday, but that was it. It was this fascination. I had so many questions about Carson, about his Tonight Show. His stable of his inner circle never talked publicly. All the books about him, that there were very few, almost all of them were very negative with people that had, in my opinion, I could be wrong, they seemed like that they had a bad experience. But the people that were actually friends with him, his coworkers, they'd never talked publicly. And I had so many questions. And guess, people were very protective of Johnny. And I will say that Peter Jones' documentary on Carson, the American Masters, was, I think, the thing that started to soften people a little bit.
Well, that's where you get the first glimpse into his troubled relationship with his mother in that documentary.
People have told me that, people that knew him.
And his ongoing troubled relationship, I guess you could fair to say, with women.
I sat down with Matt Weiner, who created Mad Men, and we talked about the similarities with Carson and with Don Draper, and there were... Definitely. Johnny was a complicated guy, a very shy person. But talking to David Steinberg and people that knew him, if he felt comfortable with you, if it was Steve Lawrence, Newhart, Rickles, Peter LaSalle, and Johnny, he was pretty much the same Johnny that you would see on The Tonight Show. It's just around, if he did not know the person, he would not make eye contact a lot of times. He would put his head down, and he was just painfully, painfully shy.
Interesting.
And the Jerry Lewis character in King of Comedy was based on Carson.
Jerry Langford. As the story goes, Johnny was approached to play that part.
He tried to get De Niro, I believe, to be a guest. I think he was trying to barter because De Niro, back then, Hoffman, Street, Pacino, they all do the late night shows. None of them went on Carson. I think maybe Hoffman early in his career before he was Hoffman, really Hoffman. But people didn't do those shows. And De Niro, and I think probably rightfully so, said, I would not be good on your show. But they did try to get Johnny. But Freddie DeCordova is wonderful.
Oh, well, Freddie turns up in the, yeah, he's in the King of Comedy.
Yeah.
Let's ask you about Freddie since it kind of comes up in the research I did in listening to your episodes. And that Freddie apparently did not do a lot of work. That LaSalle gets the lion's share of the credit, and I don't want to malign a dead man,
but
that he kind of sleptwalked through the job.
22 years of being charming and drinking vodka, apparently, during the show, and that he just exuded charm. So many people I talked to that worked on the show said he was funny, charming, handsome man, and that Peter LaSalle was happy to do the work, and Freddie just would stay in his office. 80 degrees, smoky. I talked to one guest recently that said that they would joke he was the devil because his office was always hot and smoky. And
did you ever meet him, Gil? Freddie as Rickles used to call him, mangle his name.
As a matter of fact, because he worked also when Leno was doing it.
Yes, he was a consultant. He was there for, I think, the first couple years of Jay.
And he said, and I had been doing these, guest spots for those sketches Lana would call me in for. And one time DeCordova asked one of the writers, he said, who is that kid? And he goes, that's Gilbert Gottfried. He's a comedian. He's been in these movies, these TV shows. He's all over the place. And he goes, oh, I thought he was some kid like a busboy or something.
How flattering.
Yeah.
DeCordova was larger than life, and everybody says that if he perceived a weakness and saw a vulnerability, that he would just go for the jugular.
Really?
And he and Johnny just couldn't believe it, and a lot of people that knew him couldn't believe it. He went broke. I mean, when he passed away, Johnny sent Fred's widow, Janet, a check for $100,000. And he just, I guess she was a spendthrift. That's what I've been told.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
And now back to the show. Why did they fall out?
Why did Freddie go broke?
No, why did he fall out with Johnny?
Oh, that's it. Okay. So Rick Carson, I believe, was 39 years old. Johnny's son passed away. He was a photographer. And it was a horrible accident. I don't think Johnny did the show for something like 6 weeks. It was definitely took like a month off. And it was I've talked to people that said that when he came in for the first day, he had been gone a month. Johnny, people were worried about him. He got through the show the first night. And at the very end, they did a tribute to his son. And he said a minute or two. Just talking about his son and just this outpouring of love from the public. And then they showed a clip montage of his son's photography. But when he was setting everything up, and I've heard other people that have studied this film, I think Bill Zamy, who is a Carson expert, said he studied this film like the Zimbruder film. You can see,
wow.
And I've watched it. I have watched it many times. You can see it for a split second, Carson looking over off camera, and it's DeCordova. Apparently he's on the phone or giving that wrap it up sign or something like that because the show was done in real time. I mean, we can talk about that later, that if they did not stop tape unless
right.
Della Reese had a stroke when she was guest hosting the show.
Did you know that, Gil?
No.
Yeah, they had to stop tape.
We can talk about those
and
moments.
And there was a John Davidson thing where they
stopped tape?
Yes,
we can talk about all of that. But so there are people over there that told me it was one of the rare times that they actually saw Johnny really irate. I mean, he was, after the show, he told Fred DeCordova, you will never step foot on
was
the set of
Was he speeding him
show.
Up
again.
Through his, was he, was he
yeah,
through his
he was,
through his
he
son's,
was exactly, to
his
stay,
son's tribute.
To stay on within the 60 minutes, it was the yeah. So Johnny, I mean, it was just so hard for Johnny to do this. And yeah, DeCordova kept up the appearances that he was still running things. He would go into the guest dressing room, but Peter LaSalle, the last 2 years or so, was running the show, and Fred would be off to the side, not even in the studio, but just in offices. And apparently would make snide comments about Johnny. It's like, how Johnny, Fred, what's it like to work with a genius? And he's like, well, I did work with one genius. And his name was Fred Allen.
Wow. It seems like it was a strange place to work from everything you hear. And, you know, you had Mike Reiss on the show. We had him here. Well, the writers didn't even interact with him. They didn't meet him.
You know, it's interesting that you say that.
For maybe a select few.
Back in the 60s, there was a period where Marshall Brickman was head writer, and they would go every month or so to the UN, to Johnny's apartment, and the writers would sit down with him. And the last couple years, you had Daryl Vickers and Andrew Nichols, that they were head writers, and they went to Johnny and they said, you know, I would think it would be good for you to sit down with the writers. And Johnny started having the writers, I think it was weekly, to Malibu to sit down with him, and that changed. And and he definitely, I mean, I don't know if you guys know this, but in retirement, he would have lunch with his writers, and his writers would actually give him material, and he would perform it at the lunches for them.
Geez. I didn't know that. I know he was sending material to Dave at the end.
Exactly. Peter LaSalle said, you need to send this in. But the thing is Carson left the show when I was a teenager, and you'd read things every so often about Johnny, very rare. The media liked to play it off that he was this recluse guy, but he was taking magic lessons. He was going to Africa with Bob Wright on safaris with Jim Fowler. He was learning Swahili. He was still doing the poker game. Mm-hmm. He was out and about. I mean, he definitely would retreat on the Serengeti, his yacht, and he definitely was a loner. I mean, there's no question about that. And a lot of people that would spend time with him, like Carl Reiner, would say you never really got personal with him. But he definitely was not a Howard Hughes type person that was just hiding in the corner by himself. He was he was out and about.
And what are these stories where they had to stop filming?
That is a good question. So they're very few. They stopped taping. Della Reese, when she guest hosted, had a stroke. They stopped. John Davidson. Apparently, the story goes, John told me, that I don't know if there was a strike or not, but there was something wrong with the sound where Johnny couldn't hear the laughs from the monologue, so he thought he bombed, and then John Davidson got up and the monitor was messed up, so he kicked, I think, a speaker, and the electricity all went down, and they had to put a rerun on that night. They had a stop tape rerun that night.
Wow.
And that was, yeah, that those were two... I know that at one point they had to stop tape where a gentleman from the audience actually got up onto this, made it to the stage. I think Carson was interviewing Buddy Hackett, and an audience member just sat down, and Carson tried to go with it for a little bit, and Buddy Hackett said, you know what, this is never going to air, and they stopped tape, and Carson was upset.
Did you know that, Gil? Yeah. That's good stuff. Somebody from the audience went out and sat next to Hackett.
And there's another one. There's a comedian who... Tom Shales, I talked to him, and I forget who it is. If Shales even told me, but there was a comedian that went out that just went completely blank. Nowadays, on certain shows, they will have kind of a cheat sheet, a cue card for the comedians, but
sure.
Johnny and Dave
sure.
didn't do that. And there's a guy that just came out that just, he came out, 5 seconds of panic, and I guess ran behind the curtain, and Johnny stopped taping. You know, Johnny was a comedian's comedian. You know, he really cared. And he said, let's stop tape. This can happen to anyone. We're going to do this again. And
so he was compassionate.
He was.
About it.
But then again, you have someone like John Davidson, again, who another time forgot his song lyrics. Now, my dad went to 6B, the sixth floor of NBC in the 60s. Barbara McNair and Doug McClure were on. Doug McClure had his music on cue cards. John Davidson said you had the option if you wanted cue cards or not, if you were a singer. I was at the first Letterman ever on August 30th, 93. Billy Joel absolutely had cue cards to No Man's Land. It was I very rarely would I ever see, though, and I worked in late night a little bit, see somebody that had cue cards. John Davidson, this time, I think it was in the 80s, said, no, I don't need cue cards for this song. And he lost his words, the words very... very quickly, and turned to Johnny, can we stop tape? And Johnny said, absolutely not. and it was an amazing segment. I mean, now nobody does the show in real time. I mean, they're the first ones to stop it. It's such an amazing segment. And, you know, he eventually gets it, and the audience is just, he's endeared himself to the audience. And those vulnerable moments, that stuff just very rarely. I think there was a moment recently on Seth Meyers that he had a problem with a cue card with Wally, who I know, Ferriston, and it was this really cool exchange. But it just seems that those moments very rarely happen.
Let's talk about it at Ames to a little more in detail, because it was interesting. And Scott, thank you, Scott Rogowski, for making that happen. And he's still with us.
Ed Ames is still singing.
Yeah,
wow. He's still incredible.
He's still out there. But the famous tomahawk.
Oh, yeah. He throws it, and it hits the target in the crotch.
Right, listen. Right. And he was, and I found out from listening to your episode that he didn't know what he was doing. He wasn't an experienced They sell him like because he's playing. That's what character true. Was he playing?
He was in Daniel Boone. Right?
Daniel Boone.
Yeah,
and they sell him like, oh, he's here, come on. You know, he's an experienced. He had no idea.
He had no idea, and it was one of those things where
he's teaching the rotation of the axe, but
and you can see.
It.
I mean, Johnny's brilliance. I mean, he hits the crotch. The audience explodes, and Ed Ames goes for the. He's going to go pick the axe out, and Johnny stops him. And it has been called, and I don't know if this is an actual record, but it has been called the longest sustained laugh from a studio audience. And if you go to YouTube and you watch the clip, it very may well be.
He's got great instincts, because Ames is about to go retrieve the axe. Johnny pulls on him, stops him, and he kills time by pretending he's sharpening the two axes, waits for the audience to die down, because he's got the line, because he's got the saver.
And what is that? It's like, don't tell something about being Jewish.
He says, I didn't know you were Jewish.
You're Jewish, yeah.
And then he also, I think before
it's
that.
Great television.
He says to him, he goes, I don't think you can hurt him any worse.
But again, the first 10 years, I mean, almost everything was wiped.
Groucho on the first episode?
Yeah, the first episode was actually, the first 15 minutes was all Groucho.
Can you imagine, Gil?
Wow.
Wiped out, erased.
It's Groucho with the first 15 minutes. He introduces Carson, and you had 6 months of America waiting to see Johnny while he was contractually obligated to ABC. They would not allow him out of his contract, so you had the 6 months.
He's doing the game show.
6 months of guest host, where you had Mort Saul, you had Jerry Lewis, you had Jimmy Dean, you had Merv Griffin, you had I'm trying to think who else, but you had this parade of Jack Carter, of the guest host, leading up. And Skitch Henderson and Hugh Downs.
That's
and
right.
And then leading up to October 1st, 62, where you had Groucho Marx. And it was this people, I don't know if people know what a big media event this thing was. I mean, it was so built up. And Johnny has Groucho bring him on after 15 minutes. And then it's Mel Brooks, 36-year-old Mel Brooks, 36-year-old Tony Bennett, Rudy Valli, and Joan Crawford.
How about that?
Wow.
Gone to the dustbin of history.
The idea that Mel Brooks and Tony Bennett were ever 35.
36, but yeah. Sure.
And Brooks did this thing. He reverted to Borscht Belt, and he got up on his desk, and he told me that Tony Bennett was ticked because he was making fun of Tony Bennett. He was mocking Tony Bennett singing high. And somebody told me, and I don't know if this is true, that that's when Tony Bennett was debuting I Left My Heart in San Francisco.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah.
We're gonna stop, but this is so good. We're going to come back for a part two.
Let's do it.
What do you think of that app?
I like it.
Huh? Gil?
Yes.
There's more. There's more Carson to come.
There'll be more Carson to come. And
Gilbert's going to throw an axe at a dummy.
End of our first part one of Gilbert Gottfried. Of Gilbert. One day I'll get the title right.
Let's just rename it.
Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions, The Carson Years.
Yes. We're back with more Mark Malkoff next week. Colossal Obsessions.